We're just the foundation of life, and it'll influence everything that happens in your body. One of the ones that blew my mind was a guy that came to me on crutches. He was scheduled for a static operation. He could barely walk. By week 7 or so, he came to the call, running in place, because it's a video call. He was running in place, his static was released, he canceled his operation. And if somebody had told me 5 years ago that sciatica is related to food, I would have said, that's impossible. But now I know they're intricately related.
Welcome to the New Age Human Podcast, where we have inspiring conversations with spiritual entrepreneurs in the areas of mindfulness, longevity, and innovative technology. I'm your host, John Astacio, and I'm on a mission to help humanity discover our human potential so we can together create positive change. Remember, the journey starts within. Please like and subscribe wherever you're listening or watching. And with that said, let's get to the show. Today, we're hanging out with Maria Garcia, the author of Breaking Into the Light, a journey of self-discovery and transformation. So she passionately coaches others in resetting their relationship with food to dramatically change their life experience. Let's go. Maria, welcome to the show. How's it going?
Hey, John. Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, no problem. We connected at a recent networking event, and the vibe was really good. So you're totally coming on the show. You're here now. Let's chat. You have an interesting story of recovery, and that's going to address a lot of things right now. And I want to start out today's episode with your recovery, because it's your story. And probably what made you say, you know what, I'm going to be a coach to help people with their relationship with food. So there's a lot to unpack there. So where did your journey begin?
Well, in case you're wondering why my voice is so sexy, it's because when I was 25, I had a stroke, a massive stroke, and I ended up paralyzed from the nose down. So that's also mute. It was pretty insane because I ended up being locked in my body for a couple of weeks before anybody realized that I was understanding and hearing everything. They thought I was in a coma. So,
whoa. You know what? When you said that, the first thing that came to mind was, so you can smell but you can't taste. Maybe. I don't know. But continue. I mean, do you know what caused it? And then how long did it take for you to get, like, you're if anybody's watching, she's right here. She's moving around. Obviously, she's talking, and I met her, and she's dancing. She's full of life. So, like, what happened? What did you, I guess, do you know what started, like, what the cause was?
They say the only risk factor was birth control.
Whoa.
Yeah, that's one of the risk factors when you read the inserts.
Oh, my God. Okay. So you, unfortunately, had an experience with one of those side effects, like probably one of the worst ones. Now, how did you go from paralyzed from the nose down to, I know it was a long journey, maybe you can give us like a brief synopsis of it, to now saying, hey, you know what? You need a better relationship with food.
Okay. Like you said, it was very, very slow. And it all began with moving my index finger about half a centimeter. Yeah. And then everything started progressing slowly in the hospital. I was at the hospital for 43 days. And then I went to a rehab hospital for 2 more months. So all in all, it was 4 months. And the rehab hospital was getting rehab 3 hours a day. So that was really helping me. But I thought it would have been much quicker. And because I didn't know what a stroke was, I mean, when I was at the hospital, they said, Miss, we think you're having a stroke. And I was like, what's a stroke? I didn't even know what the word meant. Wow. I didn't know what the word meant. So I thought that when I went home from the rehab hospital, that I would have been totally patched up and fine. I didn't realize that was not the case at all. So I ended up going home in a wheelchair. And the first thing that happened when I was at home is my wheelchair didn't fit through any of my doorways.
Oh.
So that's when I graduated to using a walker at home. Necessity is the mother of all learning, right?
You know what? That reminds me. So you were forced to go from a wheelchair to a walker. It was like the universe was like, you're gonna start walking faster. Like, this is gonna take too long. You have narrow hallways, narrow doorways. We did this on purpose. And good for you, just be like, you know what? I'm just gonna go into the walker.
Yeah, and it was like that. Progress was really, really slow. My family made me do therapy outside of therapy basically for hours a day. I still remember one time, we have a bike, a reclining bike, the ones where you sit on like a chair. And my mom thought, this is a good idea. Let's go pedal. So she takes me to pedal. I put my feet on the pedals. They slipped right off. I didn't even have the strength to keep my feet on the pedals. My mother, she tied my feet to the pedals.
She was determined. She's like, you're going to walk.
Yeah. So all that to say is, basically, I had zero hope, and my family kept the hope alive. They're the ones that were pushing for me to do things.
Whoa.
So that was a huge help. My brother would come over daily, work out with me.
Wow, that's big. And so that was, that's very powerful of a message of like how important like your family is and being around supportive people, whether it's blood or not blood. Wow. Yeah. And how long did it take for that process to happen for you to like start being like more like independent functionally?
Probably it was something like 3 or 4 years before I joined the gym. That was the first thing I did by myself. Wow. I still wasn't walking well, and I was definitely speaking a lot less clear and more breathy, but that was the first thing I did.
Wow. And so you're at the gym, you're working out, you're probably stumbling all over the place. I mean, good for you, right? You're like, I'm going to go into the gym, right? I know I say, oh, I'm going to, I am an active, fit person. Lately, not as much. I just signed up for the gym. I'm a month in and I haven't hit the gym yet because I'm so caught up with all this other stuff, but no excuses myself. And I'm not struggling like you were. So kudos to you. But
Thank you. So
you're at the gym. What made you say, hey, you know what? I'm going to be a coach to help people with food and just overall well-being. Where did that kind of click in as a decision? I'm curious.
Wow, that was so much further into the journey. And quite by accident. So I did all these things. I went to the gym. I did so many therapies. I did chelation therapy. I had stem cell injections. I was doing the works. I even went abroad for therapy. So my life was trying to get better. That was my life. And when I got to about 8 years post the stroke, I was 70-75% recovered, and I plateaued. And I thought, okay, this is now my life. I'm going to live it as best as I possibly can. It wasn't until 15 years after the stroke that I saw an ad for a nutrition program. And my first thought was, oh, this sounds so cool. Because I was already interested in nutrition and I had been playing with my diets for years. I had gone through macrobiotics, pescatarian, now I was a vegetarian. So I enrolled, just out of curiosity. Never in a million years did I imagine what was about to happen to me. Within 6 months of the start of the program, I had recovered another 20%, 15 years after a stroke, and got my life back. I finally got my life back.
Wow. Could you describe what that 20% means? Like, what does that entail?
Yeah, I began to hike, which I could have never done prior to the program because I had zero energy. My balance was pretty poor, and I just didn't have the wherewithal. Another thing that happened is my voice became stronger. And what I think happened, this is my non-expert opinion. So what I think happened is that my left vocal cord was semi-paralyzed because of the stroke, and because of the program, it got better.
Mm.
And before, where it was very breathy, very Marilyn Monroe, now there's bass to my voice.
I love bass. Let's go. So,
and yeah. Today I have probably 4 pages of things I noticed since the program.
Oh, wow. Yeah. It's interesting how you go by percentage. I'm like, she's very like on point with like, do you have like a spreadsheet where you're like, okay, so like these are my goals. I'm like a certain percentage away. I'm just curious, like where do you come up with percentages?
And it was just a number that I came up with. I mean, there's no goal. There's no spreadsheet. I do have a Google sheet with all the things I noticed. But just basically how I was living compared to how I'm living now. And the number is maybe a little bit arbitrary and not totally scientific.
Mm. But you do have a spreadsheet, so I did catch that.
Yeah. I do.
Yeah. Which is actually, honestly, really important. A lot of times, I mean, I have a naturopathic physician, and she's just like, write a diary of, you know, what you're eating and whatnot. And you can kind of see, like, it's good for reflecting on your day-to-day because of all the things we think about. And it's easy to be absent-minded about what's actually working, right? It's easier to pay attention to the negative than it is the positive, depending on where you are in your life. Cool. So you got this program. You're on this program, 20% in. You're hiking. You're helping with your communicate. It's helping you with your vocal cords. Communication is huge. I can only imagine what things were like for you whispering to everybody. So now you're in this program. What next?
Oh, man. I remember the whispering. That was not fun. Holy. I remember thinking that I would trade an arm because many people that have strokes and that paralyzed on one side.
Mm.
And I would think to myself how I would trade an arm for a working voice.
Oh my God.
They're both horrible.
I can only imagine. You know, like whispering is creepy. Like, how are you doing? Like, oh my God. You know?
But it wasn't just a whisper. It was like I couldn't get more than 4 words together at the same time. I ran out of breath and it was awful.
Wow. Okay. So you can do sentences. You have some bass. And what's going on? So what was the transition between you being somebody who's receiving the program to being like, was there a point where you're like, you know what? I want to help people. What was that transition? I'm curious.
Well, some people did that right away. After the program, they joined to coach. And to me, it was more like a slow transition. I said, let me see what happens to me, you know? And I kept doing it and kept doing it and seeing all these magical wins. And then finally, I was like, this is the holy grail. I have to show people this. And so I signed up to do coaching.
Okay, awesome. Is there a magical win that you didn't share yet? I want to hear about a magical win.
Oh, so many, but I'm going to tell you a ridiculous one.
Let's go.
That is really magical. Well, the girls will get this one more than the men.
Okay.
One day I'm looking in the mirror, and I'm like, did my eyelashes grow?
Your eyelashes?
I kid you not. And I thought I was hallucinating. And I thought, okay, this can't be. And then I saw one of the other coaches say the same thing in a group that we shared. And I was like, no way. I mean, this isn't of a consequence to my life, but it's just showing you that with the proper nutrition, so many magical things happen. I mean, every winter, I live in New Jersey, and every winter my nose would turn beet red the second I stepped outside. And this is happening even prior to the stroke. So I thought, this is just the way I am. The first winter after the program, that stopped happening. That stopped happening. That means my circulation improved drastically.
And so, just to be clear, before the program, you were a vegetarian, right? Were you a strict vegetarian, or were you like a processed food Oreo vegetarian?
I was never a processed food kind of person, even prior to being a vegetarian. So I was doing, well.
Wow. Or okay. I was so, to be clear, before the program and all these changes, you were a serious vegetarian and less processed food. So, okay, so let's dive into what you suggest. I want to throw some diets at you because this program sounds interesting. How would you compare this program to what makes it different from being vegetarian, maybe a carnivore, a vegan? What makes this different than all the other programs out there? Let's say we're talking to someone that has done, like, just honestly, I've done vegan, I've done vegetarian, and I've done carnivore, right? So what makes this program different?
There are a couple of differences. One of them being that we don't eat the same way all year. We change the way we eat to tell your body different things, because body, the food we eat is like a language, and it tells your body certain things. It gives your body certain messages. So that's one of the big differences.
And I agree. I forgot where I heard, but yeah, food is communication. It's data. Would you agree that when you're eating locally, you're getting data from the local environment, and so your body is getting the local microbes, anything that's trying to and has successfully thrived in your local environment, they're going to have the resources that your body needs, which is huge. So a lot of what you're doing is more local. And is that the same thing with like the seasons?
Yes, I think that eating locally definitely has benefits, but it gets even deeper than that. It's what you're eating that it tells your body, but not as far as it being local or not, just the messages. Some foods tell your body, hey, you better pack on some weight because winter's coming and we want to survive the winter. So pack on a few pounds. Some food tells your body there's abundance. It's safe to release whatever you're carrying because the winter's over and now food is easily accessible. So that's what I mean when I say messages.
So, what's a typical winter plate meal versus a typical summer? Because I'm curious about like the complete opposites there.
Winter is fasting, so in the winter you're not eating, but you're not gonna fast all winter. Right. So we call winter like a 3-day fast.
3-day fast?
Or 1 day, or yeah. But usually we do 3 days.
Now, what type of fast? Because there's water fast. I think there's a dry fast. There's the intermittent. What type of 3-day fast are we talking about? And it makes sense. And correct me if I'm wrong. The reason why you do more fasting in the winter is because all the food that you're eating is telling you to get fat or to gain weight. That's my guess.
Yeah, all the food you're eating in the fall is telling you fatten up for the winter.
Get juicy.
And then in the winter, you're fasting. But it's not just the time to release weight. It's not just the time to... Actually, fasting. The purpose of fasting is not to lose weight. The purpose of fasting is to survive.
Oh, so can you dive into that? I have a thought, but I don't want to cut you off. Continue, sorry.
Okay. I don't know if you're familiar with autophagy, which is what happens in the body when you do a longer fast, which is, think of it like this. Your body ends up burning its own proteins when you're fasting. And you would think, oh my gosh, no, I don't want to burn proteins. But wait a minute. Your body is burning the old diseased proteins first. Think of it like this. You're in the log cabin. And it's beautiful, it's winter out. But all of a sudden you notice the heat stopped working and you go, oh my gosh, what am I going to do? But you notice the fireplace. So you start throwing things in the fireplace. What do you do? Do you throw in the grand piano first? Or do you go with the old picnic tables? And that's kind of the way the body works. So it's actually healing to the body to do these longer fasts.
That's interesting. And it's interesting because I can say that people in general don't give, or let's say myself, in the beginning of my journey of learning about nutrition, I didn't give my body enough credit to know what to get rid of it, right? It's easy to say and try to be in control of everything. But your body knows not to throw out the piano, go for the broken down chairs outside and the picnic table. It knows. It's dealing with the trash daily and it's saying thank you. Thank you very much. That's pretty cool. So yeah, you're purging. So those fasts, you're purging old toxic proteins and cells and all that. But as far as, I don't know if we got into it, but are you talking about winter? What type of specific fasts do you suggest during the winter? And why is fasting a theme in the winter?
Okay, let me preface this by saying that if you're going to fast, you want to have your nutrition topped off. So we don't do fasting in the program until the very end, and it's optional, right? So you want to make sure your nutrition is very topped off, because if you fast and you're malnourished, then you're compounding the malnourishment. And then I suggest water fasting. We don't do dry fasting. You could also do a fast with the green juice that we make ourselves. We call it alkalizer. And you could do a fast using that. That ends up being more difficult, in my opinion, because it opens up that, oh, I want to eat something else. But when you're not eating, it's like, okay, I'm just not eating.
It's like a teaser.
Yeah.
It's like being given an appetizer, and then they're like, and that's it. Have fun. Yeah. That's interesting. And my guess, why winter, and it makes total sense if I'm right, if we're going based off of the natural human experience during the winter, yeah, you're not going to eat as much. Things are not as abundant. And it would make sense why foods want you to pack on some weight. Because A, you need to be warmer. And B, you're less likely to have access to food. And so it's almost like your body switching gears. Am I correct? As that logic?
Yeah. Yeah, so we're creating certain conditions that used to exist. Now there's abundance of food. Calories break, or you can just call Uber Eats and have whatever you want. But before, there was no cell phone. There was no Uber Eats. I mean, it was just whatever you found as you're walking through the savannah.
Okay, so since we're in the winter and we're coming around the corner to spring, what changes in your diet?
Beautiful. The spring is a season of abundant hunting and abundant plants are growing because of the rains. And so what to focus on during spring would be high quality proteins and a lot of your vegetables that are green vegetables, really, not your root vegetables.
What's a high quality protein?
Stuff that is grass-fed, that's higher quality.
So we're talking about meat.
Yes, yes. Okay. Meat and fish.
Meat and fish, okay, okay. So we have that high quality protein, grass-fed, and is that a good time? So would you say no fasting or slow down on the fasting in spring?
You don't want to fast at all. Well, I fast, but I do it intermittently. So I don't eat breakfast, but I don't do that because I'm trying to fast. I do that because I'm not hungry and I just don't need the food, you know?
Interesting. So now we're in spring and we're coming into summer. What changes now?
I mean, and back to your question, I'll tell you in a second.
Okay.
But that's a social construct. To eat 3 times a day. Why do we eat 3 times a day? I know people that I ask, oh, are you hungry? And they go, no, not yet.
If you're listening, she looked at her watch to tell her whether or not she's hungry, which is kind of funny.
But that's how people do nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're such this construct.
I actually used to eat every 3 hours because that was how I was taught to speed up your metabolism. And people know me as a thin guy, a slender guy. And so they're like, what the heck are you doing trying to speed up your metabolism? And for me, it was, I just want more energy because I'm going to fall asleep in the middle of the day. So it was funny how your body catches, adapts. And I would look at my watch and I'm like, okay, so it's been almost 3 hours. It makes sense why my stomach is rumbling right now. And I would have that funny relationship with time where I'm like, I can't miss the 3 hours. Like, I don't want to do a minute early or, you know, I don't want to throw things off, right? But that was me programming the body, thinking I know more than the body.
Yeah. Yeah, because I eat twice a day, sometimes eat once, and I have energy all day. I don't get tired. I don't take naps.
No naps. That's good. Especially if you're like a very active person. Like I'm seeing more people for two main reasons. One reason is people are starting to fast because, like myself, I have more mental clarity when I don't eat breakfast and I just kind of delay it. So you don't feel, and then like I try even to delay my lunch because depending on what I eat, I get that I get lethargic, I get tired. And then another reason is you save money.
Yeah.
People are like, all are on this. Huh?
All pluses.
Yeah, all pluses, you know? There's less dishes, there's less garbage, there's less trips to, or, you know, there's less groceries. It's fantastic. I love that part. Energy and you save money. That's funny. So summer, what I'm guessing summer is like abundance and maybe much less fasting, right? What kind of is summer versus spring? Is that diet very similar?
It's pretty similar. It's a little bit different. It's more of a maintenance kind of thing if you're not looking to lose any more weight and your medical issues are all resolved. And so it's kind of like just a fun season, right?
Yeah, okay, have some fun. And I feel like summer...
But not the fun that you're thinking about, not the, hey, a chocolate cake fun. But that kind of fun.
Okay. I get it, though. It's maintenance. It makes sense. It seems very aligned with someone who's, I guess, like those bodybuilders where... But not in the exact way where they tell me, oh, I'm going to go start carbing out. You know, I'm going to just go heavy with the carbs during the winter. I'm going to pack on the weight. And then come the summer, we're going to start shredding and cutting. And it's interesting how that industry naturally went that direction. And you can, based off of our conversation, you can kind of see why they do that. And they do it in the most unhealthy way. But right. It started from something and then probably got corrupted, and you know, just for visual sake and not for internal sake. Well, you got those guys with the guts with abs on top. That's pretty hilarious. Yeah. but that's very interesting. So I'm actually wanting to get into, what are your thoughts on somebody that wants to do, like, what are your thoughts on vegan, vegetarian, and carnivore? I'm just, based off of what you know now, especially coming into this as a vegetarian, and you know what, maybe even scratch that, what was it like for you to get into this program and being a vegetarian? Because I know that this program has protein from animal products. What was that like, that transition?
They never made me have protein. They suggested, maybe you want to be a little more flexitarian if you want to try it. If you don't, we will support you, whatever you decide. And it is a bit more challenging to do the program as a vegetarian, or a certain part of the program. But it's doable. And vegetarians have fantastic outcomes as well. But they never force you to eat one way or another. But that's a can of worms, though, and I'll give you my honest answer.
All right, let's open up those cans of worms.
Okay, yeah. So, I was never a vegetarian for ethical reasons. I was a vegetarian because I was looking out for my health. If that is the case for you, vegetarianism is not the healthiest diet. It's not eating animal protein. The human body needs that.
She just dropped it right there. Mic drop. So interesting enough, there are people that are vegetarian that have fantastic results. And what you're saying is the animal protein is a really good choice to add into the diet. Why would you say... What's so special about animal protein for anybody who may want to win an argument? Or just, you know, someone's curious. That, hey, I'm open-minded. I'll incorporate some animal protein. What can I do to empower myself mentally to make that change?
Animal protein is all the necessary amino acids. And you can basically get everything you need from animal proteins. Yes, there are some successful vegetarians, but they're few and far between. Most people that end up trying vegetarianism, they go back to eating meat after years. And as a matter of fact, I was watching a podcast yesterday about a guy that was doing veganism for 7 years, and his health was terrible, terrible. And then when he began eating meat again, itself came back. Mm. So the people that are successful doing this, they have to supplement very carefully. And it's a lot of work.
Yeah, I agree. It's a lot of work, especially in the society that we live in right now. There's a lot of unknowns. A lot of what you're sourcing as far as food is not local. And I've seen successful people that are vegan, but they eat what's in their backyard, and it's different because of the, like you said, you're gonna have to supplement, because what you're getting at the store is devoid of like 70% of the original nutrients that it had like 30 plus years ago. So that's why you see people feeling like they need to eat like a huge bowl of vegetables and everything, because they're just watered down, you know, like tomatoes.
And then on top of that, you cannot get from plants what you're getting from meat. You cannot.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff missing from there. I do like the idea of having the quote-unquote fruits of the animal. So raw milk, raw cheese. I'm pretty sure someone listening is going to be like, ah, so okay. But yeah, raw milk, raw cheese. And there's like a whole history on why, but I'm not going to get into that. Do you like the idea of raw milk and cheese? Have you heard of that?
Yes, I like that better than the alternative. Mm. Although so what I do have to say is humans, or no species has milk after like 2 or 3 years of age. And no species has the milk of another species, right? So it's not the optimal nutrition for your body.
How about this?
Raw is a million times better.
I have a counter to that. And I agree. It's like, yeah, if we're trying to understand what, you know, what's the best diet for a human, right? And you're looking at nature, and the go-to to look at nature for answers, honestly, has been the way, right? Everything that we do is literally just a copy. And it always falls short because we didn't create it. But what are your thoughts on, yes, we don't drink milk, or not, we're the only species that decided to drink milk from another animal. And then after, I think, adolescence, or after a certain age. And my thought is, one, humans are different from every animal. And two, if you pay attention to the, I guess, the embryo growth of a human, we look like a lot of different animals before we decide to stop at the human form. It's really freaky. I don't know if you've seen that. I see you nodding your head. So my thought, my crazy mind is thinking, we technically have the genetics of all species on the planet. So technically we could handle the fruit of all species of the planet. We can handle the milk because we have the genes of a cow somewhere inside of us. What are your thoughts?
Well, let's put it this way. When you are nursing a child, your milk is different every week. Every week your milk is different. And the cows as well. The milk for baby calves, that milk is designed for really rapid growth and gaining weight. And so our milk is designed differently.
Interesting.
So every species of milk is designed for that particular species, and it changes week by week.
Makes sense.
And I can give you an example. There were two children that were born about the same time from two sisters-in-law. And they took a picture of the children side by side sitting on the couch. The one that was breastfed, she looked like a small little thing. And the other one was plump and big, and because she was drinking cow milk. Cow milk is designed to make you grow quickly.
Interesting. Makes perfect sense, right? And that's interesting how they did that experiment on a child with cow milk versus mom's breast milk, which is,
This is for my own personal life. This is people I know.
Oh, wow. Wow. So that was two
sisters-in-law, and they weren't doing an experiment. They just had the children sitting next to each other on the couch, and they took a picture. And I knew that one mother was breastfeeding and the other one wasn't.
So the one that wasn't breastfeeding, how did you know that it was cow's milk? Was it because it was like formula?
Yeah.
Also, formula is technically cow's milk?
Well, I don't know what exactly the type of formula she was using, But it wasn't breast milk.
Right. So at the end of the day, if it's not nature made, it's not going to be the right one. And then chances are that formula has whey protein in it coming from the cows. I doubt they're sourcing it from women. That would be a good, cool thing to look into.
Like, can you imagine? So
where is that sourced from? If anybody who's listening, feel free to send a comment or an email. Where does formula milk come from? Is it cow milk? Is it just fully synthetic? Is it a mixture? Or does it really come from women? I highly doubt the third option, which is nuts. Yeah. But there's an obvious difference if you're thinking, if you're nursing, now you see the difference. Interesting. I have a niece that literally recently just got off breast milk, and I'm very curious. She's, I would say, lean. And if I were to put a side-by-side photo of her and myself, I was a chubby boy. My cheeks sagged. I can only imagine I was taken off breast milk earlier. So that's something that I can look into, because I was a fat baby, man. Like, I had like the rolls and everything.
Yeah. I'd be curious.
Yeah, yeah. I'll follow up on that. All right, so it's interesting to hear your thoughts on, you know, the vegetarian lifestyle. Let's go on, and the vegan lifestyle. Let's go into carnivore. I know that's something that's growing in popularity as of 2024, and we're halfway through 2024 as like a timestamp for anybody listening in the future. What are your thoughts on carnivore diet?
I have a lot of thoughts on that. I like the carnivore diet. I do.
Okay.
I do, because I feel like you're getting everything you need without any of the stuff you don't need. So I've seen people have miraculous healings from that.
Like what?
The latest I heard, which I was blown away by, was somebody with a heart murmur. Their heart murmur got fixed. And the heart murmur is like a hole in your heart.
That's right? That's pretty big.
That you have from birth. That's huge.
Huh. Okay. And so, based off of what you said before, and now it's concentrated source. It's a concentrated source of your vitamins and minerals and all that. Correct.
Yeah. Think of it this way. I mean, we've been eating meat for millions of years. Meat is really the only superfood. They like throwing that word around today. Oh, superfood this. No, it can't be a superfood unless it's been in our diets for millions of years.
So with the carnivore diet, very similar to the keto diet, I feel like it's like the advanced version of the keto diet, where you're putting your body into ketosis. What are your thoughts on not having carbs because you're on the carnivore diet? And what if someone falls off and they, you know, go for a carb snack here because maybe they're just having a hard time, or they just don't have access to only meats or whatever? Like, what are your thoughts on that whole, like, restricting your carbs and focusing on burning the fat from the meat and everything?
I think carbs are not a necessary macro at all.
Not a necessary macro. Interesting. Interesting.
I think we like them and they're comforting, but they're not necessary.
Huh. And a carb is essentially when the body breaks it down, it turns it into sugar. That's pretty much what the function of the carb is. So technically it will be meat and fats like butter and whatnot, and then fruit for your sugars instead of carbs, correct?
Yes, and as far as the fruits, I would also keep that to a time period instead of having fruit every day. Because think about it, in nature, fruit grew 2 months a year, didn't grow all year. So you don't want to have fruit all year. So it's best to concentrate into like days or weeks or even months, rather than having fruit today, 2 days later, having fruit again. No, when you're going to have the fruit, have it every day, but for a time period.
Don't snack on it all day. Just decide like one part of the day type of thing.
Yeah, yes and no. Because us adults, our digestions are so messed up, it's good to eat fruit on an empty stomach because fruit wants to go through quickly. And when you're eating fruit on top of other food, it ferments in your stomach.
Ooh, so then you'll get, I've heard, you said ferment and my mind just went wild. I've heard of people that have these things where they get drunk because of the fermentation of food in their gut. So that could be interesting, right? Maybe we're dealing with a certain version of that and don't even know it. That's, you know, imagine you're driving and then like you're full and you're snacking on an apple and you get pulled over. And he's like, you have a certain percentage of alcohol in your system. You're like, no, I swear. I wonder if there's any stories like that, right? I do know that that's a thing, but that's like a certain condition where it's like it defaults to like that fermentation process. That's interesting.
I more meant things like getting heartburn and stuff, but that's interesting because that's what hangovers are. Hangovers are you loaded your body with sugars. And it's like a sugar thing.
Do you have... So, hold on. Let's say you have a hangover. Is there, outside of drinking water, is there like a favorite preventative hangover solution? And then what about the day of? I'm curious if you have any tips.
Probably the best thing to do is drink a lot of water while you're drinking. So when you're out and you're having drinks... drink a lot of water in between the drinks.
I definitely do that. I try to do, so that's like number one. That's the best way.
But the best way I know. There might be another better way.
I do the same thing. If I have one glass of whether it be alcohol, whatever it is, I try to match it at least 1-to-1, if not a little bit more. That's like my personal minimum. It works for me. What about the day after? Do you have any go-tos? Or do you not drink like that?
I don't drink like that anymore. But probably just drinking a lot of water, maybe vitamin B12, that might help you.
Okay, interesting. That's cool. So fruit on an empty stomach is the best way to go for it. I'm totally going to take that. Very cool. And it may be, I guess, the last season to cover would be fall, that transition. I think that's out of all the transitions, I think that is the biggest transition diet-wise, just based off of what you said earlier.
So fall is the season to pack on weight, right? Because you're preparing for the winter. And so this is the time when you're eating a lot more root veggies and things with carbs. But not junk carbs. We're so used to like junky carbs that don't have any purpose in our bodies.
What's a couple examples of junk carbs? Just in case. I know it's obvious for you and me, but let's just say it's not as obvious. What would be some examples?
Your pastas, your rice, breads and stuff. These are things that are not doing any functions in your body.
Interesting. Okay. So put on the weight, not junk carbs. What would you say are better carbs?
The root vegetables.
And then, like you said, we technically don't need what you said. So that would just be another. Is not a fruit, correct?
Yeah, and what I would say, if you're going to have carbs, not natural carbs, fall is the season to have those in, because you're fattening up anyway. But then it turns into some people just go into fall, and then they go into spring, and they treat it like another diet. And that's what it becomes if you treat it like a diet. It becomes a fat diet of just, what do you call this? When you,
when up you're, and downs, or
yeah, just
spiraling,
yo-yoing.
Okay, yeah, yo-yoing diets. Okay. And then we get into winter, where we started, and you're going to see more fasting. Interesting. I remember you telling me this earlier. You're like, well, it depends on the time of year. That's how you want to optimize. I'm like, huh, I'm going to have to ask you about that. Well, you know, it's great to see that you are in much better shape than in the past. And it's interesting to hear your story of virtually being paralyzed, having a stroke, and now you're doing hikes, you're going to the gym, you're not whispering, you know. and a great sense of humor. So you have two books, you're a nutrition coach. What are you focusing on now that let's say someone wants to connect with you, or what's your focus right now as far as like business or helping other people? Because you found this program, you obviously know what you're doing and have gotten personal results. What's working? What you're doing right now?
And not just personal results. I'm building a database of case studies. And all my clients who've had serious issues, they've had mind-blowing results. Mind-blowing. Mm. Stopping some injections, stop CPAP machines, and just stories go on and on.
So we have stopping CPAP machines,
yeah,
for sleep apnea. And then what was the injections that you were talking about?
Insulin for diabetics.
Whoa. So we're not going to make any claims, but are you saying that there's a possibility that this can help someone with diabetes?
Yes. Okay. Type 2 diabetes is reversible. Mm. Type 1, as far as I know, is not. But even type 1 will see huge benefits.
Wow. Any, let's share one more case study of someone getting over something that is one of your clients. I'm curious, because you said you're stacking up. What are some other examples?
One of the ones that blew my mind was a guy that came to me on crutches. He was scheduled for a static operation. He could barely walk. By week 7 or so, he came to the call, running in place, because it's a video call. He was running in place, his sciatica released, he canceled his operation.
Wow, sciatica.
And if somebody had told me 5 years ago that sciatica is related to food, I would have said, that's impossible. But now I know they're intricately related.
Wow, that's pretty
bananas.
Because
food is the foundation, yeah?
Yeah.
Food is the foundation of life, and it'll influence everything that happens in your body. Everything.
Whoa, that's... I agree. And that's why I work very hard on what I eat, and I try to connect with as many people that are knowledgeable, such as yourself, on just what to eat when, and kind of be there to answer some questions to some difficult questions. Did I say answer questions? Answer. Give answers to difficult questions. You understand. You understand. We have the same brain. So right now, you're taking in clients. What's the best way for people to reach you?
Right now, the best way to reach me is go to my website, which is genuinelymariette.com.
Okay, cool. And then,
I was going to say that you can book a free discovery call.
Perfect.
Let's
All
just
right.
chat and see how I can help.
Genuinelymariette.com.
Correct.
Okay, and book that discovery call. Cool, yeah, so if anybody's interested and you want to learn a little bit more about this seasonal look at outlook at what you're eating, and whether you have diabetes, sciatica, or something else that you think Maria can help you with, give her a call. it couldn't hurt to do that free discovery call. Well, before we go, Maria, is there anything that we didn't cover that you wanted to share that I didn't ask about before we close out today?
I love that you asked me that because I was just thinking, I want to talk about willpower.
Okay.
Willpower is a horrible long-term strategy. So that's the reason why diets do not work. You can't hand people a list of things to follow because they won't follow it. They'll follow it maybe 6 days and then their willpower just gives out. Or something happens in your life. There goes your eating program out the window. So we work to understand your food psychology. That's the foundation of the course. And if you get this part and you really dive in, this is what's going to create lifelong results.
Nice. And I agree, right? Everybody comes from a different place of willpower. It takes willpower to go to the gym. It takes willpower to make that decision. And then if someone gives you, like you said, a list of stuff, you're going to be like, oh, God, come on. Right? And just speaking on willpower, right? Get rid of all the bad stuff in your pantry so you don't have to look at it. That's one of the things that I heard. Is there one thing that, like that, right? Getting rid of all the food in your pantry that is against your diet. Is there anything like that that you suggest to increase willpower?
Well, I like what you said. And I think it's even more interesting if you could have that food stuff there, or that non-food rather, and not eat it. That's what's real. That's where the power is at. That you don't have to use willpower.
Mm. And what are some things that you do to help people build up that willpower instead of just say, you know what, good luck?
We're not working with willpower. We're working with awareness and consciousness.
Mm.
That eliminates the need for the use of willpower.
Mm. And then maybe can you give us some examples of how you help with awareness and conscious versus willpower? Willpower?
Yes. When you're using conscious awareness, you're finally understanding why you eat certain things, why you don't like certain things, how things really feel in your body. Because a lot of times you don't even notice, because we humans have an interesting capacity to eat mindlessly, right? And it came from us being in the wild. We'd run into a bush and we were eating whatever fruits were there. But we had to be on the lookout. Because if we were not on the lookout, we became food.
Mm-hmm.
And so now we have this ability to just not even notice what we're eating after the third bite. We're just like, whatever. I don't even know how I finished that.
Interesting. Yeah, so you're not trying to... Yeah, you know what? It reminds me of just seeing animals eating. And whether it's a bird or a squirrel, like each time they take a bite of something, they're looking around. They take another bite, they're looking around. And I get stressed looking at them, you know? So it makes sense where the power of being aware and slowing down. And I think that's that transition from animal to human, that self-awareness, that situational awareness, and no longer the need to be in that survival mode, which changes everything. It's almost like very interesting how the body, the human body, is well adapted or designed, if anything, to thrive in that environment of not being in survival mode, which is very interesting, right? Right. And that would probably be a key to the human diet. That's different from the animal diet in comparison, which is, I think, huge, to be honest. I don't think we give that credit, the credit it deserves, which, awesome. Yeah. Willpower. I agree. Well, thank you for coming on today. This was pretty cool. I hope that we provided, I know we provide a lot of value, and you came to the plate and you stepped up, and you've, I mean, we went through the whole year in a conversation. I was hoping we would be able to do that. So that's pretty cool. And ending off with willpower versus self-awareness and giving yourself time to eat.
Yes, conscious eating, very conscious important.
Conscious eating. Thank you for coming on the show, Maria.
My pleasure. It was a lot of fun. And then one last tip for your audience. Drink water. Just drink water. Because that's going to fill you up and take care of one of your six hungers, which aren't real. Only one is real.
Oh, that's what I wanted to get into. Oh, the six hungers. I knew it. All right. We literally just passed 1 hour. Let's can you go over the six hungers?
Why don't we do a follow up?
Okay. Then on the next episode, we may just go over the six hungers. Very well, very well. Till next time, have a good day. Let's stay connected.
Thank you.
And anybody listening, thank you for joining us today. And I hope you got something that you didn't hear before. And today is another day of perspective around longevity and how we can thrive as human beings. So yes, thanks for showing up today as a listener, as a watcher. And if you want to hear more about awesome stories with entrepreneurs that have amazing backgrounds in longevity, mindfulness, and innovative technology, just hit like and subscribe. Till next time, see you later.